If you travel a lot for work or for vacation, you might be familiar with that feeling you get knowing you're leaving your space unused for long periods of time and you're still paying for that privilege. But hosting on Airbnb means you don't have to leave your home sitting empty when you're away. Being an Airbnb host isn't just a way to earn some extra cash. It's a chance to share your space and make a guest's vacation all the more memorable. You might be thinking, maybe my place isn't the right fit, but don't write it off just yet. Your potential Airbnb might be right in front of you. Whether it's a spare room or even your entire home, there's an opportunity waiting. Airbnb turns your home into a practical and even profitable venture. We just got back from a family trip to Hawaii where we stayed in a great Airbnb, but our place back home could have been a highlight to somebody else's travels, and we could have used the extra cash to help pay for the trip. So if you're curious about hosting on Airbnb, find out how much your space could be worth by visiting airbnb.com/host. Once again, that's airbnb.com/host. What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, because someone somewhere is looking for help with what you already know how to do. Now, here's a little Side Hustle Show trivia for you. This guest's episode was the most popular recording from all of 2020. It clocked in with more than 77,000 downloads so far. And in that episode, we covered his path from, quote, no skills to an average of $3,000 a month on the side. From selfmadewebdesigner.com, Chris Mistrick. Welcome back to the Side Hustle Show.
Hey, Nick, thank you so much for having me. And I say we go for another record. We go for another blockbuster episode here.
Let's do it. And we are tackling what is a controversial topic in the world of freelancers. I think few words will get as polarizing a response amongst freelance service providers as Upwork will. Because depending on who you ask, it's either this, you know, fantastic global platform to connect with well-paying gigs, high-quality clients, or it's this hopeless, desperate race to the bottom, super competitive. There's, you know, no chance of success on here. And like a lot of things, I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, and a lot of it depends on your strategy, how you approach it, how well you show up there, because Upwork is the world's largest freelance marketplace. If you were a freelance service provider, you probably don't want to ignore it, because they booked $2.5 billion worth of work last year, billion with a B. And in this episode, I want to explore how to get some of that cash flowing to you, how to get your piece of the pie, right? So Chris is a pro at this. He's a web design pro who has booked more than $80,000 worth of work through the Upwork platform. We're going to be talking through some of his best practices for earning high-paying jobs. And we're focusing on Upwork here, yes, but the same rules apply for lots of other freelance platforms like Fiverr, like Thumbtack, like your own website, like Google My Business, right? These are the kind of the bare bones rules. Set yourself up for success, treat clients well, and you're off to the races. Notes and links for this one, along with the full text summary from our call, are at sidehustlenation.com/Upwork. Now, if you are in the position of, well, I'm still looking for a side hustle idea, what type of service could I provide? One of my favorite methods for brainstorming ideas is on Upwork itself. So if you go to upwork.com and then find work, I think is the top navigation button, you will find this huge alphabetical list of different skills that people hire for on Upwork. And it goes from A to Z, or, you know, goes from like 3D printing to Zapier integrations or something. And I can almost guarantee that you will find something you can do on that list, and you can be reasonably confident that if Upwork has created a dedicated landing page for that skill, you can probably be assured that people are looking for help in that area. So Chris, let's go back to the very beginning. I'm a new freelancer, or maybe I already have a profile on Upwork. Tell me about how I should present myself. How do I set my profile up for success? Are there some must-have elements, features here?
When you are setting yourself up on the platform, you've got to think through the eyes of your potential client, right? And I see so many freelancers make the mistake of making it all about them, right? They list how awesome they are. They say things like, let's say we're talking about web designers. They'll say things like, I'm awesome and I have this many years of experience and I can do HTML and CSS and JavaScript and I can clean your house on the weekends and DJ for you if you need it, right? Like, they focus so much on themselves versus thinking, what's the connection between what I have to offer and what a client is really looking for. And so the rule of thumb is that in everything that you do, from your profile to your pitch to when you jump on like an actual conversation or an interview with a client, if the process goes that far with a project, if every 7 or 8 words you don't have the pronoun you or your, right? Then you're not talking about your client enough, right? Or on the opposite end of that, if every 7 or 8 words you've got the pronouns me, my, or I, you're thinking about and talking about yourself way too much. This idea that in order to convince a client to hire you, you've got to show up as the hero. But that's actually not what the story is. The story is that the client is the hero and you are the guide to help them become more successful. So think of yourself like Gandalf, right? And you're helping Frodo face down monsters and get the ring and whatever that mountain is called, because I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings fan.
It's like, how deep down this metaphor are we going to go? No, but I like that, because this is straight out of Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. Make the client your hero. And this goes for, you know, website copy as well. Make the visitor the hero. You are the guide that they have just discovered. You know, let them be Luke and you can be Obi-Wan, right? We'll get in more, you know, movie metaphors here, I'm sure, throughout.
Absolutely.
And I will say, from the standpoint of as someone hiring on these platforms, the folks who do stand out are the ones who make it about me. Like, yes, I want to make sure you have the skills and credentials to do the work and do it well, right? But if you can position that in such a way that you have my bottom line in mind, or like one of the common copywriting traits is like, so what? Like, why is that important to the client? Like, I hired somebody a few years ago for like Pinterest graphics. And there was a bunch of proposals that somebody was like, I can do these so that you get more views, more click. Like, these are like viral worthy pin designs or something. I was like, yes, that's the one. That's the one I want, right? They kind of read between the lines there. On the profile, you're allowed kind of a headline, like, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is what I specialize in. There's a little like summary bio section. It looks like you can upload a video now. Talk to me about the importance of these different elements on there.
Yeah, my encouragement is to, as much as you can, fill out the entire profile to the max, right? You never know what is going to be the deciding factor in someone hiring you or not, right? So for instance, in the early days when I was trying to get clients to hire me, somebody actually reached out and said, hey, I saw that you went to college in Dallas. I'm from Texas. You're my guy, right? And so a seemingly non-consequential element of my profile was the deciding factor in somebody saying yes to me. And that might seem silly, but I've been on the other side of the aisle of actually trying to hire freelancers. And it's a pretty sobering experience, because you've got a lot of folks who are pitching to you and you have this task of going, oh man, am I going to pick the right one? What are some things that I'm looking for? And so you never know what the deciding factor is going to be. And Upwork has actually come a long way with what you can include on your profile. There's places for the video, you know, which I highly encourage folks to put that, no matter how shy or introverted you might be. My video was literally from my MacBook camera. And I did a little bit of production, but this was before I'd ever even done any video editing. I did it in like iMovie. I put a little bit of the embedded iMovie music where it's just like, you know, these nice little guitar licks over top of it. And that actually got me a job later on. I got reached out to from a course builder and they said, we loved your video. We like how you were on camera. We'd love to hire you. So there's all these little elements that, like, you just never know what's going to be the deciding factor in somebody saying yes to you.
I like that. And I mean, turn the camera on, be yourself and try and explain who you are, who you help, how you do it, what makes you different, why you do what you do. I think you can get that out in 30 to 60 seconds. And it's something that may set you apart. It may not be the sole deciding factor, but it, you know, every little bit counts. It sounds like Upwork, like a lot of these platforms, is a search engine in itself. So if you're targeting one specific type of skill, like, do you, obviously you'd probably want to put that like in your headline of your profile, but do you dilute that if you go longer and say, well, I can also like you said, clean your house on the weekends, and I can also do this, this, I know these skills and all this other stuff.
The more that you can niche down with who you are, what you do, with what tools you use, and who you serve specifically, it actually opens you up for more success. And a lot of freelancers are afraid to get really specific because they think, man, if I don't cast this wide net, then I'm going to lose some folks. And so it's actually the opposite of that. That is true. We're not net casters, right? We are line fishermen. We are casting a line to catch a specific type of fish. I don't want to call clients fish, but this is just another one of those analogies that just kind of, it kind of works well, right? And there are a few things that you can do in your profile description, right? So you want to talk about the specifics of who you are, what you do, who you serve. Of course, again, keeping it client-centric. I've seen some folks who are real specific in their title, and I think this is something that really helps to set folks apart. Rather than saying, I'm a web developer, or even web developer with JavaScript experience, you could say, I'm a mobile and web application developer who specializes in React and serves the health and fitness industry, right? Like, as crazy as that might seem, like, that's going to be way more attractive to what's called your ideal client or ideal customer avatar than if it was just like, I'm a good web developer. I've even seen folks who put a little bit of the accolades in their title, right? So there's a friend of mine, her name's Morgan Overholt. She's earned over $500,000 in the last 4 years on Upwork, right? As a graphic designer. One thing that she does that's really cool is she says, Business Insider featured graphic designer, you know, or like top earning graphic designer on Upwork, right? And that's her title. And that's something that is really attractive to a lot of folks who are coming in and looking for that real specific type of freelancer.
Yeah, no, some outside social proof, if you have it, I think that's awesome. And of course, you can't put top earning freelancer on Upwork until you have some jobs under your belt.
Right.
Are you allowed to, if you have outside work from a portfolio, are you allowed to link to your website? I imagine they probably discourage what they would call like platform disintermediation. Like, no, we want to make our Upwork fee. Like, don't go linking to your website. Are you allowed to showcase what you can do?
Absolutely. And that's a really incredible word that you use, platform disintermediation. I've got to file that one away so I could sound smart to folks that I talk to about Upwork. Yeah, no, for sure, they don't want you to take the business that you get on Upwork off of the platform, and for good reason. And, you know, we can talk about this a little bit later. But at the same time, they've just set up recently to where you can get outside testimonies from clients that you've gotten outside of Upwork. And this is really good for folks who, let's say, are just getting started, and they don't have a lot of that social proof like we were talking about in the Upwork feedback, but they've got a few jobs underneath their belt with other clients. And so what it is on your profile, you can actually input the emails of a previous client that you've worked with and send a form out to them. And it'll come from you and say, hey, can you fill out this form and give me some feedback on Upwork, right? And so then they fill out the form that shows up on your job profile. So it's a really good way for folks who are kind of worried about like, and man, is it going to take me a long time to find jobs? Like, I have no proof of like being good at what I do because I have no feedback. It's a good way to do that. And even, you know, for the brand newcomer, and like I was when I first joined the platform, where I was not only learning how to freelance, I was learning how to be a web designer at the same time, reaching out to somebody, maybe a previous boss who doesn't necessarily have any idea about what kind of web designer you would be or what kind of freelancer you would be in the skill that you're freelancing for, but they know you're a person of integrity who hits deadlines, who communicates well. Like, figuring out any type of social proof or assurance to the client that you can kind of get somebody to vouch for you is going to be helpful.
Yeah, I'm having flashbacks to like college admissions and requesting letters of recommendation.
Right. Yep.
Oh, would you write me a letter? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so that is actually a good way to kind of seed the profile with some initial feedback. It's kind of like, you know, the Amazon product with zero reviews. Nobody really wants to take a chance on that. Is it any good? How's it going to work? I don't know, but trying to seed that profile, setting your profile up for success, you know, filling in all the boxes that you can, making it client-centric, and then trying to gather some outside feedback if you have it, and, you know, maybe stretching a little bit to people who can vouch for your work ethic, maybe not your specific skills, but to seed it that way. Anything else you find working for people, or what worked for you when you were that person with no reviews, no feedback, no history on the platform?
Yeah, for sure. There's one thing that I kind of did almost by accident that ended up being really good. There is a place to actually input your skills in your profile. And it's not just you describing your skills in your profile description, but there's actually a little section where you can say, you know, you start typing and then it'll kind of auto finish for you. One thing that was really helpful to me was that they allow you to put up to like 10 or 11, right? I only put 4 because I only had 4, right? I was brand new to everything. And so I'm like, well, I'm not going to tell people I'm an expert PHP developer because I can't do PHP, right? And so I've got 4 things. And one of the things that I had learned was from one of the first clients that I had working on her website, she wanted to use a plugin called Optimize Press. And it's not nearly as popular of a plugin anymore. But back when I was getting started, you know, I started right around 2015, it was kind of a much more popular like web page builder within WordPress. And so that was one of like 4 or 5 other skills that I had. And so what ended up happening was a lot of people in the early days were coming to me specifically for Optimize Press. And this is kind of another good cue that you can give to your clients. If they see a lot of skills on there, right? If they see the full 11 skills that are all really varied and diversified, it's kind of the old adage, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. And so it's almost like you're telling the client, I'm really not that great at anything. I can kind of be good at all of these things. But if you have a few on there and you're real specific, like with a specific tool or, you know, a specific skill set, then the client is going to see that and say, okay, this person is really skilled at the thing that I really need help with. So they're probably the best person for this. And there's probably some Upwork algorithm going on in there as well, where they're saying, okay, this guy is focusing on this one thing. So we're going to bring him to the top of the pitches when a client sees the different freelancers that are bidding on the job.
I'll be right back with more from Chris in just a minute, but a couple cool resources to share with you from our sponsors today. The first is an on-demand workshop to help you go from blank page to publishing your first book in as little as 90 days. And that's at selfpublishing.com/sidehustle. Last month, Chandler Bolt and I sat down. We did this live workshop for Side Hustle Nation on the pros and cons of self-publishing, on how to come up with your book idea and take it from idea to rough draft as fast as possible. Chandler shared a bunch of examples of how a book can be a part of your broader business strategy. And then we talked about how to set your launch up for success. Chandler's one of my go-to resources for all things self-publishing. I mean, the dude wrote his first book at age 19. He's added a bunch more best-selling titles since then. And on top of that, his self-publishing school has helped more than 5,000 aspiring authors take the plunge and get their work out to the world. If you've ever thought about writing a book, whether as an extra income stream or to generate leads for your business, or just to share a story that you've wanted to tell, I want to invite you to check out this completely free training at selfpublishing.com/sidehustle. Plus, when you register, Chandler will send you a free copy of his book, Published, The Proven Path from Blank Page to Published Author. Again, that's at selfpublishing.com/sidehustle for that free training workshop today. Again, selfpublishing.com/sidehustle. This edition of the Side Hustle Show is also sponsored by Skillshare. Skillshare is the online learning community for creative and curious people like you and I. As a Side Hustle Show listener, you can level up your personal and professional skills with a free trial of premium membership at skillshare.com/sidehustle. And begin to learn, express, and discover your own creativity. Skillshare is home to a huge library of online, on-demand expert taught classes on everything from graphic design to social media to freelancing, productivity, e-commerce, SEO, you name it, you'll find it there. For example, I mentioned at the top of the show this big list of Upwork categories. Again, upwork.com/findwork or upwork.com and hit find work in the top nav. And this is as close to an off-the-shelf side hustle as you're going to find. Go through that list of skills that clients are already hiring for and find one or more that sounds interesting, right? And then go learn those skills, go learn that thing through Skillshare. I mean, that was Chris's whole bit on the show last year. I taught myself this skill using free or inexpensive resources, and you can go do the same thing. Web design is just one of hundreds and hundreds of potential freelance skills that are out there. But check out the full catalog for yourself. That's at skillshare.com/sidehustle. And again, you'll be able to move your creative journey forward without putting life on hold. The idea here with Skillshare is to create real projects and get the support of fellow creatives so you can accomplish some real growth. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/sidehustle and claim that free month of premium membership. That's 1 month free at skillshare.com/sidehustle. I love the angle of targeting a specific piece of software and positioning yourself as an expert, you know, especially if you can be kind of an early adopter, you know, with something that is continuing to pick up steam. I mean, we've seen guests on the show do this for Asana and Pipedrive and Salesforce, and, you know, WordPress itself is probably a big example, but maybe you're the project management expert in Monday.com or Notion, or, you know, maybe you are the expert funnel builder, but you focus on ActiveCampaign or something. Like, I really, really like that angle of saying, like, no, I'm the go-to guy for Optimized Press. I'm not going to put in UX design or a bunch of other, you know, random skills just to fill out my 10 or 11. Like, no, this is what I do. And of course, you can expand after the fact. You know, if you get other jobs, you can expand that. But I like that as a way to get started, to hitch your cart to a popular software product. And we've seen people do it with QuickBooks and other accounting stuff. Lots of opportunities to play there, and new software keeps coming out all the time. So that's like, oh, yeah, there's always a chance to be the early adopter on the next thing that happens. But Chris, tell me about the job filters that are available to you as a freelancer to decide what to bid on, like what to throw your hat in the ring for.
You can waste a lot of your time bidding on projects that you have no business bidding on. And this goes back again to hearing the voices of your ideal client. You need to be thinking about what they're going to be doing to set up a job description, right? Like what types of keywords they're going to include in their description, what level of freelancer they're going to be looking for in comparison to what you are. And even when it comes down to budget and things like that, one of the things that I think is key, and I found it to be true for myself, and I know Upwork has said that they're trying to improve this, but you have more of a chance of actually getting in front of the client if, number one, there aren't a ton of proposals on it, right? So a lot of other freelancers who have put a bid in, if there's any more than 15, it's likely going to be really hard to actually get in front of the eyes of the client. So every job that I bid on is in the less than 5 range. Like, there have been less than 5 other freelancers who have been on this.
So that's a checkbox or a little slider you can toggle to see what projects are available.
Right. So let's get into the specifics of the platform for just a little bit. So when you initially log into Upwork, the first page that it puts you at is your job feed. And your job feed is something that Upwork is like trying to put really maybe beneficial jobs for you according to your skills or other jobs that you've taken in the past, but they've not done a great job at putting the right jobs in front of people. For instance, like right, I'm looking at mine right now, and the first one is online personal assistants. I've never done any personal assisting. I would be a horrible personal assistant. And so you've really got to be intentional. There's some search options that you can get really specific. And obviously there's the big one, which is US only. So you can search for people who are saying, I'm a client and I only want to find freelancers who are in the US, right? So that's a kind of a big one for folks who are inside of the US.
So you can filter by geography, you can filter by the number of proposals, you can filter by like the desired rate or experience level or something like that?
Right. Uh-huh. There's experience level. There's, you know, there's 3 of them. There's entry level, intermediate, and expert. And this is a tricky one because this is the experience level that a client has said that they wanted. And so what I have found is that the more technical the skill gets, the more a client doesn't really have a good understanding of entry level versus intermediate versus expert. And so
okay,
obviously those kind of correlate with where the client wants to be as far as pay range or budget goes. But there have been a lot of times where I've seen a client put intermediate. He actually needed somebody with a lot more expertise. There have been a few times when somebody put expert and they actually could have probably used maybe intermediate, maybe even gone all the way down to entry level. So when I was first getting started, I didn't have a lot of skills. And so again, I was trying to hear the voices of my clients. And so my thought was, okay, for sure, they're probably, with my skill set, they're probably looking for somebody who's entry level, and that would be the best bet for me. So that's where I started. That's where I stayed for probably the first year. As my skills grew, as my feedback grew, I went up to intermediate, would kind of dabble in expert. Now that I've got a lot of feedback and I have clients actually coming to me every single week, I only bid on expert level positions. Not necessarily because it's an expert level job, but more so because that signifies a pay range that a client is willing to pay.
Yeah. Okay. What's your take on the dollars that the client has spent on Upwork before metric? I always think this is an interesting one because it could go a couple ways.
My assumption at the very beginning was that the folks who had a lot less experience or a lot less feedback from freelancers on Upwork were actually going to be more willing to take a risk on somebody who had a lot less experience as a freelancer on the platform.
Yeah, like, hey, I'm new, you're new, let's be new at this together.
Right, let's figure this thing out together. And so that was the hypothesis that I had going into it. And so I only looked for people who had no hires or at most 1 to 9 hires. And that's another filter on the client history filter that you can specify on your job feed. And so that ended up being beneficial for me. But like you said, it could go the other way. There could be folks who say, I've hired a lot of folks, I've hired a lot of beginners, I'm okay with folks who haven't been a freelancer on Upwork because I've had some situations where it went well for me. And so I'm okay with you not having any prior experience. What I say is you do the freelancer scientific method, right? You have a hypothesis about what is going to work for you. You test out that hypothesis by actually, you know, filtering your jobs, bidding on the jobs that you're seeing from your filter. You get feedback from that test. So you say, okay, I got no responses, or I got maybe 1 or 2 nibbles, or I got an interview and it went all the way into a hire, right? And then the next time you're testing something out, you have a little bit more information about what has worked with you. And this is a great thing about freelancing, is that there are some tried and true principles, 100%, you know, like we talked about before, the story brand principles, keeping it all about the client, trying to think from the client's perspective, niching down and making sure you're getting really specific about who you serve and what tools you use and the skill set that you have. But then there's a lot of gray areas where it's like, you've just got to test it out and see what works for you. So for instance, when it comes to bidding on projects, there are a few guys out there who say, you know, when they bid, they lay out every single thing that they're going to do, right? They say, okay, you need a WordPress site. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to start with building you a theme, and then we're going to go into putting that theme on GitHub, and then I'm going to check in GitHub. Like, they just go into details. That has worked great for them. That has not worked great for me. My most successful bids or pitches to clients have been really simple. And so that's a scenario where it's like, you've just got to test it out and see what works for you.
Yeah, I could see from the client side, like, I don't need to see how the sausage is made. Like, I'm more interested in the finished product. But, it, you know, if it works for you, you never know until you test. Is there a way, Chris, to like get notified of these jobs that meet your filters, or do you just kind of have to be like on the platform hitting refresh all day?
Yeah, there actually is. And this is another thing that is new. So once you set up a filter, you can actually save that filter to where it's kind of quick access on the main job feed. So the first thing that you see when you log in. And from there, when you click on those filters, there's actually a way to get an RSS feed. And so you can take your RSS feed and put it into a newsreader, and then you'll actually have those jobs show up in your newsreader. And there's only one app that I've found that actually does a push notification for newsreader that's actually pretty decent in price. It's called News Explorer. I think it's like $4.99 a year or something like that, or maybe lifetime. But I've got all of my job safe searches in there. And then anytime one of those perfect jobs comes up, I get a notification on my phone. I'm not constantly having to go into Upwork and hit refresh. Now, I will say, I've done a little bit of testing on this. It is not always instantaneous. And so if you're in a season where you are trying to get, you know, like, you don't have anything and you need to get a job quickly, the best bet is to always go to the app and just kind of every once in a while, you know, hit refresh and see if any new job postings that hit your search criterion are showing up. But like for me, who's not actively looking for a job, I've got filters where if there's a really nice job that has a really good pay rate and it's really simple, I want to be notified because that's something that I might potentially go and bid on. And so I've got those job searches or job filters in my newsfeeder that's giving me notifications. There's another paid service called Leapfrog Leads. And I actually just found out about this. It's something like $20 a month, but they email you every time a new job with your, you know, search criterion comes up and is available. So I haven't done any testing on that, so I wouldn't be able to vouch for it completely, but I've heard some other folks who say they've used it and it's been helpful.
Yeah, I think these are great little hacks to kind of be first to know or one of the first to know about these potential gigs, especially, you know, depending on the niche, it could be a multi-$1,000 project. Yeah, I want to throw my hat in the ring on this. Because if you can be one of the first to respond, we've heard this from, I think, you on last year's episode and several other freelancers too. If you can be one of the first people to present yourself and do it in a coherent, client-centric manner, like that gives you a huge leg up on somebody who is 24 hours late.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's even a field in the job description that will tell you the last time the client looked at the proposals, right? And so that's kind of a good indicator as well, right? Like if you've got a job that's stale and the client hasn't looked at it in maybe 4 or 5 days or maybe a week, right? Like it might be a good sign that this isn't worth your time, or maybe don't anticipate it too much, right? Like maybe don't put too much on the idea that you're gonna get this one. So I try to look and see, has the client been on there? Have they refreshed their project description within the last hour? Like, and so if that's the case, then I've got a good chance of them actually, as soon as I submit it, they're gonna see my proposal and then they might reach out to me instantaneously. So in those seasons where I'm kind of actively looking for new jobs, I just kind of hover around my job feed and I'm just kind of actively, you know, refreshing and submitting and waiting for a message back, because it is all about being the first to the counter or having the quickest draw, so to speak.
Yeah. If you can put yourself, like you talked about, in the client's shoes, because it'd be the reason they're on Upwork is because they don't know anybody. If they had a go-to person for this, they would have just hired them, but they don't. And so that's why they're casting their line out into the vast sea of the internet, hoping to find the right person. And if you can present yourself in that way, I think you've got a pretty good chance for success there. When you're hiring, it feels amazing to finally close out a job search and hit the ground running with your new hire. But what if you could get rid of the search part and just get matched with qualified candidates? Well, now you can with our sponsor, Indeed. It's simple. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. The matching and hiring platform is trusted by over 3.5 million businesses worldwide to connect with great talent faster. And 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. For my next hire, I'm using Indeed to tap into a talent pool of 350 million unique monthly visitors. And what else is cool is Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. And how about this? Side Hustle Show listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Side Hustle Show. Just go to Indeed.com/Side Hustle Show right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Side Hustle Show. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. If you travel a lot for work or for vacation, you might be familiar with that feeling you get knowing you're leaving your space unused for long periods of time and you're still paying for that privilege. But hosting on Airbnb means you don't have to leave your home sitting empty when you're away. Being an Airbnb host isn't just a way to earn some extra cash. It's a chance to share your space and make a guest's vacation all the more memorable. You might be thinking, maybe my place isn't the right fit, but don't write it off just yet. Your potential Airbnb might be right in front of you. Whether it's a spare room or even your entire home, there's an opportunity waiting. Airbnb turns your home into a practical and even profitable venture. We just got back from a family trip to Hawaii where we stayed in a great Airbnb, but our place back home could have been a highlight to somebody else's travels, and we could have used the extra cash to help pay for the trip. So if you're curious about hosting on Airbnb, find out how much your space could be worth by visiting airbnb.com/host. Once again, that's airbnb.com/host. Do you have maybe a recent example or something like from a recent cover letter? Like what do you say in that first initial pitch or that first initial outreach that gets somebody's attention?
What I try to do is, again, make it as client-specific as I possibly can. So there's a few things to this, right? Every client has a personality, and sometimes that personality shows up in the job description. And so, for instance, if I get a job description that has some kind of really relational, bubbly words, I'm not going to get down to business right away, right? Like I'm going to talk about how much I'm impressed with their business. I'm going to talk about how I really like creating relationships with clients that go on, right? I'm more relational, right? Because that's what the client is looking for. They're not looking for somebody who's really cold and like, okay, you need A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and here's my call to action. Let's go, right? Like that's going to be almost a turnoff to them. At the same time, there are folks who are very businesslike in their job descriptions, and you don't want to be like, hey, I want to be your best friend, right? Like that's going to be a turnoff to them. So you kind of want to think about it from the personality of the client. I keep somewhat of a formula, and I want to be really careful with saying formula because immediately people think, oh, you copy and paste. And that is not the case. Like you will have a hard time finding clients if you're just taking the same proposal or bid and copying and pasting it for every single person.
But it makes sense to start from a template versus starting from scratch every time.
Absolutely. And again, this is like you want to be the first to the punch. And so if you've got something that you can make it easy for you to just kind of fill in the blanks, that would be helpful to kind of get it off the ground. So I always say to start out with what's called a value proposition. And really, this is something that what you're doing is you're doing sales copy. This is just tried and true sales copy that people have figured out works really well when they are writing out some copy and trying to convince somebody to buy. This is something that I found in my research and found in the studying that I've done and found in my own experience has been helpful. So you've got the value proposition, you've got the value that you're adding. And again, like you said, adding a so that to the end of a value proposition is super important because you're helping to tie the overarching outcome of what the client is actually looking to accomplish to what it is that you're doing. The second thing that I put is a motivation, right? And so here's where we go a little bit deeper into the why behind the what, right? Like it's the age-old adage that nobody buys a drill because they want a drill, right? They want to buy a drill because they want to put a hole in the wall. And you could go even further. You could say, I don't want to put a hole in the wall. I want to hang a picture. I don't want to hang a picture. I want to have a memory of my family that brings me emotional feelings of like love and connection and all that kind of stuff. And so you want to try to get down to some deeper level motivations in your first few sentences that you're sending to your client, because that'll be some real key indicators. Like you had mentioned, like, yeah, this guy gets it. This freelancer gets it. They understand what I'm really trying to accomplish here.
That's cool. I never heard it phrased that way. The why behind the what. I really like that.
It's actually out of the Toyota Corporation, the founding father of Toyota. I think his last name is Toyota. I can't remember the first name, but he calls it the five whys, right? Like, so if you can ask why five times, you're going to get to the core issue, right? You're going to come to some real foundational ideas. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to go down five times. Like, I think if you go down three times, you're already ahead of the game when it comes to a lot of freelancers. So that's the motivation. The second one is the value that you add. So here's where you first start to talk about what it is that you have to offer, right? And most people, they put this at the very top of their pitch, right? They're like, I'm awesome. I've done this. I'm great at this. I'm a super professional. But I always encourage people to save that until the middle. And it's important. Somebody wants to know that you're good at the skills that they're looking to hire for. But, you know, it's something that can come a lot later because, again, we're creatures of, you know, underlying motivations. So after that, I encourage people to kind of anticipate an anxiety that somebody might have, that a client might have, and kind of address it in a way that isn't magnifying it. You know, you don't want to make it, you know, put an anxiety in the heart of a client that isn't actually there. For instance, like when I was new, I would say I don't have a lot of experience on Upwork, but I have experience working as a web designer with other clients. I'm happy to refer you to them. This was before you could add outside testimonies to your profile. And so if you would like to talk to any of them, I gladly give you their number. They'd be willing to have a conversation with you. And so that's kind of a big social proof of like, oh, wow, somebody's actually willing to have a phone conversation with me. They must really be behind this person. And then the final thing that a lot of freelancers leave out is a call to action. You need to take the guesswork out of what is next for the client. And so one hack or one secret that I learned from the friend of mine who I mentioned, Morgan Overholt, is to add a link to your Calendly calendar to say like, hey, I'd love to talk about this further. If you want to have a conversation, here's my Calendly calendar. Sign up for a time. If there's not a time on here that works for you, just let me know and we'll figure something else out. But that's like your buy now button, right? Where somebody goes, okay, I know exactly what to do next.
Okay, I like this. So what I'm hearing is trying to mirror the client's tone and language, you know, what type of person are they looking for? Trying to dig into their motivations, you know, why might they be requesting this type of project to the best that you're able to? I really like this anticipate an anxiety, which is when I was in AP history class, you know, they called in essay writing, they called this like a concession statement. It's like, here's the argument that I'm going to make. You might think that the opposite is true, but, and that could be valid, but here's why it's not. I like that. Anticipate an objection or an anxiety. And then this call to action, make it simple. What's the next step? Here's my calendar. Let's book a call. Do you put a price or an hourly bid or a fixed price bid like on that initial cover letter, that initial outreach?
I try to save conversations about budgets until I'm actually having a conversation with the client, because there's just so much that you don't know from that job description that you might dig a little bit deeper and you realize, man, I quoted you $2,000, but this is a $7,000 project. And here's why. You're not going to be able to do that over text, especially when you're competing with people who are like, I'll do it for 10 bucks for you. You know, like, so I try to do ballpark ranges in my bids on my flat rates and my hourly rates. I don't put that in my cover letter unless it's specifically asked for. And I save talks about budget until I've had a good conversation with the client. We both know we're a good fit for each other and we can have that one-on-one conversation.
Yeah, that's always hard on the hiring side. It's always, that's always the question. Well, what's your budget? You're like, I don't know. Like, well, I want it done right. And so I like as a client, I like the fixed price thing for a lot of one-off projects. Like, maybe you're super fast at this. You know, maybe this is super easy for you. Maybe I would have been better off paying your hourly price instead. But it's just like, it's something easier to budget for. It was like a one-off line item expense versus, oh, I don't know how long this is going to take. Doesn't give anybody an incentive to work quickly, for sure. All right. So your goal is to get somebody on the phone where you can do more kind of fact finding on, you know, what are you looking for? That gives you a better idea of what to bid. And I think it's probably going to be that way for a lot of freelance work and a lot of projects that aren't, you know, super simple, cut and dry. Like, I just need, you know, X done by this date. And it's pretty self-explanatory. Any surprises that have popped up on the Upwork platform or throughout your freelancing journey, mistakes along the way? I just want to tee that up there for maybe something that didn't go the way you expected.
Man, I have made more mistakes as a freelancer, specifically on Upwork, than I even care to talk about. I like to say, like, if I have been able to be successful on the platform, there is a really good chance that you're going to be successful. I think it was like the second or third job that I got, I made some mistakes. I went really quickly into saying yes to the client and didn't get a lot of the details. I didn't have that initial interview where I was fact-finding and trying to uncover things that were important to the client. I just kind of assumed all this stuff. I went and bulldozed it. Well, I made some mistakes. He got mad at me. He closed me out of his website. He shut down the project and he asked for a full refund. And so that was probably the biggest learning curve for me. And I wish I could say that it didn't happen again, but it did. I guess I'm just kind of a dense person. I think the main thing that I learned from this is that as much as you want to be eager to get in front of a client, you want to be slow to start your contract. Because once a contract is started, it is going to end in you getting feedback. It is going to end in that affecting your job success score. And your job success score, in case no one's familiar with it, it's kind of like Upwork's grade for you as a freelancer. You know, are you like an A student freelancer, are you a B student, so on and so forth. And so bad feedback can be really hard to come back from. I have come back from it. Mine went all the way down to 79% at one point in time, which is the equivalent of like having leprosy, you know, in the olden times.
In the freelancer world, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's not impossible, but I can guarantee you it is a lot harder to come back from a 79% than it is just to make sure that you're being careful about who you say yes to in the jobs that you're taking on. So one of the things that I found was if I was unsure of whether or not I was going to be able to do the thing that the client had asked me to do, I would just tell them that up front. And I would say, before we start the contract, can I just kind of give it a shot and see if I can kind of poke around a little bit and have an idea? You know, I won't charge you anything for this. It's just kind of a fact-finding thing. If I figure out I'm not able to do it, no harm, no foul, I'll, you know, certainly try to connect you with another freelancer who might be a great person for the job. But if I can, we'll start the contract and then I'll finish out the project. And I've saved myself a lot of heartache by going that route. There was one job in particular, a guy had kind of a forum for NHL hockey lovers, right? Like just a whole bunch of people who like talking about NHL. And he wanted to see if I could implement this specific type of service within his code. And it involved a lot of API work that I just wasn't familiar with, but I was like, hey, I'll give it a shot if you're okay with that. You know, I'm not going to bring your entire site down, but I'll kind of peek around and see if it's something that I'm familiar with. If not, part ways. But if it is, then I'll say yes. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And then turns out I got in, I had no clue what I was doing. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to say no to this one.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I've had other experiences like that where it's like, well, if it was on this plugin, it would be super easy, but it's on this other plugin. Like, are you able to do that? And let me log in and see. And they're like, yeah, no dice. But yeah. It's so much better to find out early than to, you know, just have somebody break your site or not be able to do it or just ghost you. And like, yeah. So appreciate you sharing that and the comeback story from the 79%.
Oh man, there was a few months where I was working really hard to come back from it. But I think a lot of freelancers are just afraid to express limitations. They're afraid that they're going to lose the job as a result of being open and honest. And what I've found is that the opposite is true, that when you're just really honest with your client about where you're at and your skill level, they're going to appreciate that. And most times they're still going to give you a shot because most clients are reasonable. They're going to know that you have limitations. And if you have a client that isn't reasonable with the fact that you have limitations, you need to stay away from them because they are going to be a nightmare client, right? And so if you're just open and honest and say, you know, I'm not 100% sure, I guarantee you that I'll take all the risk off your shoulders. I'll give it a shot and we'll see where this goes. A lot of times the client says, I'm totally okay with that. And they're appreciative of the fact that you're just upfront.
Yeah. Steer clear of the hard to work with clients. Obviously you want to be challenged as a professional, but you don't want to work for somebody who just does not respect your ideas, just has unrealistic expectations, all of that stuff. So Chris, this has been excellent advice for freelancers, not just on the Upwork platform, but I think in general, best practices for client communications, positioning yourself, all of that stuff, really helpful stuff. What's next for you? What's going on? What are you excited about the rest of this year?
Yeah, so I've actually got a free training that is coming up towards the end of August that I'm super excited about. It's called 3 Simple Steps to Land High Paying Clients on Upwork. So I'm taking a lot of what I've talked about in here and I'm just kind of laying it out in a really simple format. And that's leading into a course that I've created for folks to become top rated and top paid freelancers on Upwork. So that's all coming down the pipe. I like to say that I'm trying to pass the torch of what I've learned from all the mistakes that I've made and the things that I've figured out that have been the right thing to do. And I'm trying to make it easier for folks who, you know, they're trying to earn extra income or maybe even a full-time income on Upwork as a freelancer. So that's coming up at the end of August. I'm super excited about it.
I like it. That's at upworkforwebdesigners.com. Of course, you can find Chris at selfmadewebdesigner.com. Check out his podcast over there. Chris, let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation 2021 edition.
Yeah, the thing that I would encourage anybody out there that I'm just now finding out is that at the very beginning, you want to try to put systems and methodologies in place that is going to make it easier for you to do the work efficiently. So I started out with no systems. I got really busy and realized I've got to put some things into place that makes my work efficient so I'm not working 80 hours, 100 hours a week. So I definitely encourage people to think about in terms of where you want to end up, right? Where you want to end. Do you want to be working 80 hours a week? Of course not. So you want to find a way to have a side hustle that you can do in a reasonable amount of time. And the only way to do that is to have systems and setup, automations, different things that you're doing that's going to really help you to get to that point.
I like that one. I don't know how many people have shared something similar, but I like that. Figure out the systems and workflows so you're not reinventing the wheel every time out. And 2020, for the sake of trivia, was if you don't quit, you win. So appreciate really both of those number one tips. Once again, sidehustlenation.com/Upwork is where you'll find the full text summary with all of Chris's top tips from the call. That is it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen. And I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.